Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Money and Change. My name is Ira Robinson. As always, we are here with Stu Scheer. Hello, Stu.
Hey, Ira. How you doing on this cold day?
Not too bad at all. It's my anniversary, and I thought I'd toss out a little happy anniversary to my wife. And it's also my birthday coming up very, very quickly. So happy birthday to me.
Well, and happy anniversary to you and Jolene, and happy birthday to you coming up here
in a few days.
So you just have to remember, you know, the older you get, the more you have to behave yourself.
I don't want to.
Neither do I. You think you're old. Okay. All righty. Well, hey, you know, we've got some shout outs to do. And a big shout out to WCET FM 101.7 in Columbia, South Carolina for carrying the show. We really appreciate it. Also to L&M Radio Network and Michael Vera for carrying the show, and also Open Eyes Radio Network for carrying the show. And gee, I think I know somebody on Open Eyes.
Indeed, that's me. That's me. And I've been
the birthday you.
Indeed, yes. And for those that are curious or wanting another alternative way to get the Money and Change shows, the archives, I've started to upload them over onto my website, openeyesnetwork.com. That means also that we're now available on a lot of other places. We're available on Stitcher. We're available on iTunes, TuneIn, a lot of different places out there. So you guys can pick us up on all of those different locations.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, you know, this is really great. I mean, the more we get out, the more people we can help. And that's the name of the game for the show.
That's right. So if you go to my website, OpenEyesNetwork.com. Original Worlds is the other website, but OpenEyesNetwork.com. If you guys go over there and click on any of the archive shows, I have a link that's available to go to the iTunes page so that you guys can hit the subscribe button there on that page so that anytime that we put out a new archive every week, we can it will automatically be downloaded to you. So.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, last week I said I was going to go up to the University of Findlay for a basketball game last Saturday, and boy, was it packed. And it was on national TV on ESPN3, and it was one heck of a good game. I mean, it was fantastic. Charlie Ernst, the coach, did an excellent job of preparing the players there and the other coaches. Did a fantastic job. Findlay at that time was rated 13th in the country, and I'm going to check later on this week. I think they might have moved up to number 10 in the country. And I saw some moves out of those Findlay Oilers that I want to tell you something. They look like they're professional material. I have never seen moves like that against another school that is very good in basketball. And not since the Findlay National Champions way back when, I believe about 8 to 9 years ago. And they went perfect season, 36-0. Not too many teams do that. And you say, well, they're Division II. Who did they play? Well, that year they played Xavier University, which is, I believe, in the Big East or in the Big 12, whatever. And they're a Division I school. They beat Ohio State University, and they're a Division I school. They beat Bowling Green State University, and they're a Division I team. So what did that tell you? If they can beat those three, and those three that year were excellent teams, if they can beat those three, they went on to have a perfect season. It was excellent. So a big shout out. And I also have to shout out to Captain Steve Baum for arranging parking for me. I really appreciate it. My feeble knees don't go that well, and Steve Baum arranged for that parking, so a big shout out to him. Also a big shout out to Rusty Ducks Custom Pens. And Phil at Rusty Ducks Custom Pens has done an excellent job. He's on the Friends of Money and Change page. There are some pictures there of some of the pens that he has made over the last year, and does an excellent job. I mean, he even had a pen that he was working on, and I believe he says it was fossilized mastodon. Now, where do you get that? Do you go down to the 7-Eleven and say, "Hey, I need some, frozen mastodon fur or whatever"? You just don't do that. He has a way to find some supplier that has this stuff, and then you have to turn it very carefully to make the pens because it puts off a lot of dust. And I'm waiting for Phil to, next time I see him, to come up to me looking like a Neanderthal. "Hey, want a pen? Want a pen? I give you a pen." So anyhow, he does a fantastic job. Check him out at the Friends of Money and Change at moneyandchange.weebly.com. Also, D52 Creative Services with Mary Frances Barnes Rodriguez. Hey, I said it three times so far. And I got it right three times in a row. That's fantastic. I've known her for years. And she does a lot of creative stuff, especially in marketing, graphic design, illustration, print ads, digital ads, flyers, brochures, postcards, logo development, market research, market relations, public relations, copywriting, you name it, she does it. She is fantastic. So you want to check her out at D, as in David, 52, Creative Services. That will be all one word. And you want to check that out. And you can go to our website and check that out at moneyandchange.weebly.com, back in the Friends of Money and Change. Also, a big shout out to Show Us, Don't Tell Us with Skills and Mike and Papa Bear. And they're going to be on Fridays, I believe. What time are they on Friday nights?
Midnight Eastern Standard Time.
And if I remember right, it goes midnight to 3 a.m.?
That's right. Yep, midnight to 3.
So those of you that don't need your beauty sleep, hey, listen to them. And what are they on? L&M Radio Network or Open L&M, Eyes?
Yeah, L&M Radio Network. But we also play on the Open Eyes Radio Network. We play the same stream. So you can get the stream whether you're on lnmradionetwork.com or openeyesnetwork.com.
Hey, it's a great time. And also, remember, we did a roundtable. I believe that was last week, wasn't it?
It was,
We
yeah.
did a roundtable. And that was on L&M Radio Network. And it was you, myself, Mike Vera, and we had Skills was on and Papa Bear.
And Riscala was there as well, yep.
Oh, and that's right, Riscala. Yeah, I haven't talked to Riscala in a long time. But anyhow, we had a good time on that show, and I was amazed at a lot of the financial questions that were being fielded. It was amazing.
Yeah, there were quite a few there.
Yeah, it's like, oh, are we having a Money and Change show tonight? but, it was kind of interesting. And some of the people would ask some rather far out questions, and I would give them what I would perceive to be a good thought or an answer. But I'm not a financial professional, I just do a lot of research.
And one thing I will add in too here, for those of you guys that aren't aware, if you go over to lnmradionetwork.com or openeyesnetwork.com, you can also join in with the chat room and get involved with the hosts, get involved with the people that are in there conversing. It's always a really great time. And for some reason, it always seems to devolve into topics about food, but don't hold that against them.
Food is good, okay, as long as it's good food.
That's right.
Okay. So anyhow, you want to check it out. I mean, some of that conversation, I think we're going to be doing some more of those if I'm correct on that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Cause we had so much fun doing that. It's like a bunch of guys just sitting around, just shooting the breeze.
Yep. And one of these days here real soon, we're going to have Mike Vera come on here on the show as well.
Oh my God. Everybody's got to tune in for that. That's going to be a fun one. That is going to be a fun one. Michael and I used to do the show in the early years, like about 5 years ago, 4 years ago. And I remember we started out, we only did 30 minutes. And then later on, I got this phone call and he says, "Stu, could you do an hour?" I said, "Yeah, I'll do an hour. That's okay." And then I hung up and I'm walking around my house going, "What did I just do? I just committed myself to an hour." And then I thought, darn, that's 4 hours of research a day just to come up for a 1 hour show once a week. So anyhow, I've enjoyed every minute of it. I really do. And you meet a lot of neat people, especially Skills and Papa Bear. Well, that's a double plug for those guys. And also, you know, Papa Bear is doing another show, isn't he, over WCET?
Yeah, well, he's doing it on the L&M Radio Network as well. So he does that on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm trying to remember what he's got it called. It's What's Going On. Yeah, What's Going On is what he's got it titled.
Yeah, and, you know, we chatted a little bit this morning, by the way. I was on, Skills was on, and so I got the Skype message, can we chat? And, of course, we did some serious chatting this morning about the train wreck that happened close to the Greenbrier in West Virginia. And so we had a lot of information being passed forth and different thoughts and so forth. So, you know, it's, we always try to keep in touch. Also, a big shout out to Susie and Scott Phillips from the American Wood Shop. And they're on Public Broadcasting System. And a big shout out to Bowling Green State University, WBGSU, TV and radio. And they sponsor the show, as well as a few other companies. But check out the American Wood Shop. And I think, you know, if you're not a woodworker, it's interesting to watch to see what they do. Also, you want to check us out on moneyandchange.weebly.com. We've got one of the latest videos, a dollar devaluation. 2018, does the truth finally matter? Also, bribery, bullion, and bullying. You know, we always talk about that on the show. So you need to check that out at moneyandchange.weebly.com. The webpage is updated probably 5 days a week, if not six. And if you're a prepper, you want to check out Prepping You. And that's at moneyandchange.com. So we have a lot of different pages, a lot of different topics, a lot of information there. Plus, we also have the humor page with the Wrinkle City Gazette. And we'll get into that later on in the show. Well, you know, we always do a disclaimer, and the information contained in this presented material is from the posting of news agencies on the Internet and are not necessarily the views or opinions of the owners of this program. We are not responsible for and expressly disclaim all liability for damages of any kind arising out of use, reference to, or reliance on any information contained in this broadcast. The information provided is not offered as financial advice, financial planning, or for investment purposes, so you want to use this information at your own risk. Now, from the currency chart at XE.com, right at 4 o'clock today, the euro gained a penny against the dollar. The dollar's sliding a little bit. It's now $1.25 to the U.S. dollar. The Great British Pound, it went up a penny. It's now up to $1.42. The Australian dollar stayed the same at 80 cents to the dollar. The Canadian dollar went up a penny. It's up to 81 cents. The Swiss franc, holy cow, it went up to $1.07. And really, if you extend out the decimal places, it's $1.07.9. It's going up, and it's, I don't know how to predict this one, because, you know, years ago they used to be $1.10 to the U.S. dollar for a long time. So I don't know. I think things are going to get better for a lot of countries trade wise, and we're going to talk a little bit about what that does to the U.S. economy and what can happen if we over devaluate the dollar. Also, the yen stayed the same at 0.9 cents. The Chinese yuan, hey, it's still at 15.8 cents to the dollar. The Kuwaiti dinar, well, it's $3.33.8. So it's getting ready to go up, I think, to $3.34 an ounce. Vietnamese dong, the wheelbarrow got pretty heavy. Last week it was 22,709.38 dong to the dollar. This week it's 22,725.21 to the dollar. It's getting heavier. I don't know why. I don't know why it goes up and down like that, but it does. You take a look at Bitcoin. Ira, how many times have we warned people about Bitcoin?
So many.
It's almost like warning them about Wells Fargo Bank.
Yeah.
They're not one and the same, but you take a look at it. You know, 3 weeks ago, Actually, 4 weeks ago. Well, let's go back even 5 weeks ago. Bitcoin was $14,872.27 for one Bitcoin. And then there was some thievery going around with about, what was it, $563 or $593 million worth of Bitcoin suddenly disappearing.
Just vanishing, well, yep.
Yeah, just vanishing. Well, it went down to $11,809.41 for one Bitcoin. Now it's down to $9,154.28. Now, would anybody in their right mind, even in their left mind, would want to get into Bitcoin? There's a lot of stuff going on, and we're going to talk about that here in just a little bit. Gold went up another $2. Last week it was $1,348.16. It's now up to $1,350.23. And, you know, as things get a little testy in the world and people look at markets and economies, they have a tendency to buy gold and silver and other precious metals. So you have to watch out for that. Silver. Well, last week it was $17.30 an ounce. It's now $17.25 an ounce. Then you have platinum. It dropped about $8. It's down to $1,006.43 an ounce. Palladium, it took a dump. Hey, that's not a good word. It went down, we'll put it that way. Last week it was $1,097.81 an ounce. Now it's down to $1,036.05 an ounce. And then we have our good buddy Ethereum. Well, last week it was $1,189 an ounce. Now it's down to $1,003.61 an ounce. So, you know, if you're going to even think about getting into precious metals, like we've said on every show, pay down your debt, put some money aside, buy some long-term emergency food just in case the markets go sour, the banks crash, or whatever. And then also get your medications to have those on hand, a good first aid kit, good vitamins, and appropriate clothing and shelter. Do that first. And once you've accomplished that and you have some spare money, then go ahead and do your research into investing in precious metals. And that would be like gold, silver, palladium, platinum, and there are some others. But do your research first. And like we always say, we don't recommend or prefer that you buy from one source or another. We always say, you know, do your research, your own research. And there are plenty of companies out there. And we just mentioned APMEX for one, American Precious Metal Exchange, silver.com, kitco.com, and there's a bunch of others. But if you do, check them out. Make sure that they're reputable. And I want to tell you something. I heard something on Clark Howard that just about drove me up the wall. He's saying, don't invest in hard precious metals, like something you can hold in your hand. It's a value, you know, like copper, silver, gold, palladium, platinum, so forth. He said, get the silvers or get the certificates. I about had a cow. I was driving in the car and I thought, what did he say?
Run away.
Run. I mean, run like hell. I mean, I'm serious. Now, maybe my ears were playing tricks on me. And who knows, sometimes it happens. But to go the way that of paper certificates, that way you don't have to worry about storing them. You know what can happen if there's a market crash or the company goes under, somebody absconds the gold, and you go to cash it in? Oh, yeah, it's a nice certificate. We're out of business. See you later. What are you going to do with that piece of paper? You could use it to heat your home. You could make fancy wallpaper out of it. Or you could cut it up in 2-inch by 2-inch squares and use it for common everyday appliance in the bathroom, if you know what I mean. So what you want to do is make sure that you do get physical gold, silver. Make sure you do have a place to store it that is safe and secure. And only buy little bits. Buy a 10th ounce coin or a half ounce coin. If you don't have the money to buy gold, buy silver. Silver has a lot of industrial applications too. And it's going to be in short supply. But never buy the paper. The paper's been oversold probably hundreds of times. And it doesn't have the backing of it. Yeah, it's a piece of paper. And oh yeah, they'll give you gold. But if the company goes under, where are you going to get your gold? Well, you know, we bring up a lot of different articles during the week. And Zero Hedge had one about crypto rubles. Remember, we always talk a little bit about cryptocurrencies. And now the Russian parliament is set to make the crypto ruble legal tender. And the article said from Zero Hedge, with legislation to regulate the mining and trading of cryptocurrency still awaiting consideration by the Russian parliament, one lawmaker has introduced a draft bill to create a national cryptocurrency called the crypto ruble. And the amendments proposed by that draft law codify the digital format financial asset as a legal means of payment on the territory of Russia. That's scary to me. I don't know about you, Ira. That is just... So what happens if your wallet disappears? You know, because you take that cryptocurrency and you put it in a digital wallet. And then you have to save everything in there. A lot of the countries that are either banning the cryptocurrencies or saying we're going to develop our own, they want to control something. They actually want to control you.
Well, and you know, as far as the wallet thing goes, I mean, just imagine if you had invested a healthy amount of your money potential into that and just have it, you know, disappear. I know a lot of people who have been jumping onto the Bitcoin bandwagon who have spent so much of their savings trying to gather together Bitcoins in the hopes that it's going to be, you know, raising up in value over the next year or so or 2 years or whatever. And just to have that go poof, I mean,
what's their electric bill?
Yeah.
You know, exactly. We talked about a couple of weeks ago, some guys in China wanted to buy a power plant for, I don't know, what was it, $3 million for a small power plant?
Yep.
Could you imagine that? Just so you can data mine Bitcoin, all the money that you put into that energy that you could have put into production of other goods and services, it's really crazy. I mean, I've got a spare computer, and there's no way I'm going to convert that into a Bitcoin miner. It would probably burn up, number one. Number two, I'd have to look at my electric bill and probably faint after I got it because of the power that the computer would have to use up just to even get a fraction of a Bitcoin through algorithms and all kinds of magical incantations that a mathematician would do. It's scary. Now, so Russia's going to have their own crypto ruble. On the other hand, South Korea, according to Reuters, there was an article by Dahi Kim and Cynthia Kim. And they said South Korea says they have no plans to ban cryptocurrency exchanges, and they uncover 600 million illegal trades. Now, do you want to get involved with stuff like that? And according to the article, it said South Korea's finance minister said the government has no plans to shut down cryptocurrency trading. They welcome news for investors, but they're worried because there's a lot of stuff that's going on. And Kim Dong-yeon on Wednesday, you know, as traders at home come in and around, the world have been spooked by conflicting comments from government officials in South Korea, which is a major hub of cryptocurrency trade. And that the statement that they were going to ban local digital coin exchanges, that was a problem. And you have all these crypto crimes. You know, in South Korea, they were saying the customs said about 637.5 billion won, that's W-O-N, which is their currency, which is roughly about $596.2 million worth of exchange crimes were detected. An illegal foreign currency trading of 472.3 billion formed the bulk of the cryptocurrency crimes. Myself, hey, I just go ahead and ban the thing. It's not worth it. It wastes a lot of time and energy. Put it to more productive use. And you know, insurance companies. Suzanne Barlin from Reuters wrote an article about insurers are gingerly testing Bitcoin businesses with heist policies. I mean, they're looking for a gimmick to sell more insurance, don't you think?
Yeah, it's definitely what it seems like to me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of a, okay, there's a market to be made here. You know, and according to the article, it said major global insurers are starting to offer protection against cryptocurrency theft, willing to tackle humongous challenges it brings rather than miss out on this volatile and loosely regulated but rapidly growing business. And so far, only a few insurers sell such insurance, including XL Catlin, C-A-T-L-A-N, Chubb, C-H-U-B-B, and Mitsui Sumimoto Insurance. Well, that's a mouthful. Mitsui Sumimoto Insurance. Yet several others told Reuters they are looking into theft coverage for companies that handle digital currencies like Bitcoin and Ether, which trade between anonymous parties. And the risks are clear. I mean, digital currency investors have already lost billions from dozens of cryptocurrency hacks, technical errors, and fraud. And according to the report, many hacked exchanges, you know, later closed down, they shuttered up. And on Friday, the Tokyo-based exchange CoinCheck became the latest casualty, reporting a loss of around $534 million worth of coins to hackers. Man, I really wouldn't want to get involved in Bitcoin, and you could imagine what the insurance would be for that. I mean, the risk with that would be extremely expensive. And I don't think that, I mean, how could you afford stuff like that? You know, according to the report, Lloyd's of London, which is the world's largest marketplace, was providing insurance to the exchange, according to a person familiar with the matter, and Reuters could not determine the terms or scope of the coverage, and a Lloyd's spokesman declined to discuss Coinbase. You know, if Lloyd's of London really doesn't want to discuss it, is it worth it? So, you know, when you're talking about cryptocurrencies, do you really, really, really want to get involved? That's why it's so scary. We had another article out of Reuters. We had a bunch this week, you know, and I take a look at about 22 different financial and news organizations every day just for the show. And I try to find articles that, are, number one, are going to be of current interest to the show, but also point out some stuff that's going on in the background that will cause problems later on. And Michelle Price had an article about the CFTC in the United States to fine UBS, Deutsche Bank, HSBC for spoofing and manipulation. Didn't we have something about the LIBOR rate and those guys trying to fix the Forex or the foreign exchange market with currencies?
I do remember that. Yeah, I don't remember how long ago that was, though.
Oh, man, I think that was like 3 or 4 years ago.
It might have been around and then, yeah.
you know, and we were always talking about certain banks, UBS, Deutsche Bank, HSBC. Oh, what else did we have? We've talked about
the same ones we still have problems with.
You know, okay, get in line, you know, and, you know, we'll talk about you. Personally, UBS, Deutsche Bank is a gigantic bank in Germany. HSBC is a big worldwide bank. I don't think I'd put any money with any of those, let alone some of the big U.S. banks that's done a lot of spoofing and manipulation and basically screwing their customers and their investors. But the report said that the U.S. derivatives regulator is set to announce that it has fined European lenders UBS, HSBC, and Deutsche Bank millions of dollars for so-called spoofing and manipulation in the U.S. futures market. And three people with direct knowledge of this matter informed Reuters about it. Snitches, I guess, is what we'll call them. Well, the logo of Swiss Bank UBS, you know, you take a look at all this stuff out there with the different banks and what's going on. Well, the enforcement action by the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, or the CFTC, is a result of a multi-agency investigation that involves the Department of Justice, or the DOJ, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, and it's the first kind of its kind for the CFTC. And the fines for UBS and Deutsche Bank will be upward of $10 million, while the fine for HSBC will be slightly less than that, without providing exact figures. And of course, you know, the spokesman for HSBC, Deutsche Bank, and UBS declined to comment. Hey, no comprehende. You should understand it. You know, they just, oh, we're not going to say a word. That would be basically openly admitting guilt. Well, spoofing, what is it? You know, spoofing involves placing bids to buy or offers to sell futures contracts with the intent to cancel them before execution. And by creating an illusion of demand, spoofers can influence prices to benefit their market positions. And that's like, you know, you take a look at the stock market. That goes on every day. Everybody is spoofing everybody else to get you to buy their stock. And then it goes so high, you know, they always sell, buy low, sell high. And if they spoof it enough, whether it's in futures or in regular stocks and bonds, and they drive up the price, they could have some insiders driving the prices up. And when it gets to a certain point that they want, and all of these guys have bought in low, and let's say it goes up to $10 a share or another $10 in the share, then they say, okay, we've made our 10 bucks, we're selling out. And all of a sudden the shares of stock suddenly drop. And people that had gotten suckered into the whole thing are left holding the bag. And you'd say, well, that sounds like a rigged deal. Well, if you're going to trade stocks, you've got to watch it every minute. I mean, there are algorithms and programs for trading stocks and so forth that go well beyond my pay grade. Matter of fact, my pay grade is retirement, which isn't that much. But you take a look at it, and there's a lot of that going on. And sometimes you get caught and sometimes you don't. Well, this spoofing is a criminal offense under a provision implemented as part of the 2010 Dodd-Frank financial reform. And you know, if they would have had the Glass-Steagall Act in place, we wouldn't have needed the Dodd-Frank financial reform bill or law. It's a ridiculous thing. Anyhow, thousands of pages are still not done messing with it and developing it. And if you just went back to the Glass-Steagall Act, you wouldn't have that problem. So that's scary. And then you take a look at BNP Paribas. Well, that unit pled guilty in the U.S. to currency rigging, and they were fined at $90 million. and a unit of BNP Paribas SA, South America, agreed to plead guilty and pay a $90 million criminal fine for rigging foreign currency prices. You know, if people would just get a set of kahunas, I guess that's a word I can use on the air. If they could just get some testicular fortitude, and when they catch the banks with these crimes, throw some people in jail like they did in Iceland, it would be far much better. Because you have these people that are committing crimes against their customers or investors just to make a little extra money. And then when they get caught, they just get a slap on the wrist. I mean, let's get serious. If you catch them doing something wrong, nail them. That way nobody else will commit the same thing. And if they do, then they know that, hey, like Iceland, you're going to an island out in the middle of nowhere with a beautiful view of a snow-covered mountain, and all you can do is eat fish every day because that's what you're going to do to survive. Well, you know, we talked about the currencies going up against the dollar by a penny or so, and that can be a lot of money. And when you look at currency, the decimal places probably go out 5 or 6, maybe 7 decimal places. And a weaker dollar can do two things. If it's not real weak and it's only dropped a penny or two, in other words, we take a look at the Canadian dollar, it went up to 81 cents to the US dollar. You take a look at that and you say, okay, well, we've lost a little bit to the Canadians. Yeah, but we can sell things to the Canadians. We could sell people U.S. goods from Canada, England, whatever. And they save a little bit of money that way. Now, if the U.S. dollar was valued at its full face value across the world at a dollar, which it's not, but let's just say it is, people would be hesitant about buying U.S. goods, just as we would be hesitant about buying Swiss equipment, Swiss-made equipment, because it costs $1.07 more to purchase, that 7 cents more. And so as a result, you don't want to buy a lot of Swiss stuff. You want to sell the American goods. So coming down is good. But then you reach a point where you've gone too far and the trade is a big imbalance. And you take a look at U.S. trade with China. It's a big imbalance. I mean, you go to your local Wally World and a lot of goods there made in China. And back in the Nixon years, hey, it was great. Let's put some industry into China. And I know a friend of mine that has an industry, and they went to these federal meetings and they're saying, hey, come on, let's put some money over there, show them what capitalism is. They walked out of that meeting and they said, there's no way we're going to invest a propeller plant in China because they will take what Czar patented stuff and they will go ahead and steal it. And we're not going to put a propeller plant there because we don't have control on how it's made. There are certain specifications for different things for prop-driven planes. And they're one of the last prop providers. As a matter of fact, what was the name of the plane that went around the world that had a prop on the front and a prop on the back?
Oh, shoot. I don't remember the name of it. Yeah, I don't remember the name of that one. Isn't it? Nope. I can't remember it for sure. Lucky Lindy? Was that maybe it?
No. Lucky Lindy?
What the heck was it?
Remember, Bert Rutan designed the plane. And it was going to go all the way around the world. Wasn't it called the Voyager?
That might be it, yeah.
Yeah, that's the ticket. Well, yeah, anyhow.
The Roots and Voyager. Yeah, that's it. Yep.
Yeah, it had a problem with one of the props. It broke apart in flight. And it wasn't a Hartzell propeller. I'll give that plug. And as a result, they said, well, we don't know what we're going to do with this because it's a carbon fiber composite propeller. Well, who can make one of those? And so they called up, at the time it was TRW Hartzell, and they said, can you make up a prop? And they said, yeah, it's got to be carbon fiber and it's got to be light. And they said, okay, bring a sample of the prop down. We're going to test it and we will build you one. So they did, I think it was the rear prop assembly and everything, and they built them a new one. And they put it on that plane, and sure enough, they went all the way around the world on that. Because they had the technology and they had the honor built into doing that prop, manufacturing that prop. And it didn't fail. It didn't break apart. It was made very well. And so sometimes, you know, you say, well, what does that have to do? Well, here you have a company that puts out very good equipment, very good. And you see companies that have airlines that use props, or the small turboprop planes, or even those Pipers and the Cessnas and so forth, they get their props, whether it's a 5-blade or a 6-blade or a 2-blade, you know, they're very good at what they do. If they can get them sold on the foreign market a little bit less money, and they sell more of them, that's fine. But if they go beyond a certain point in economics, it doesn't really pay to make that, to sell it abroad. It makes it very expensive. So that's when you have good and weak dollar for the U.S. And that's just what you end up with. And, you know, if the U.S. dollar, if you go up to Canada, for example, years ago, the Canadian dollar was worth more than the U.S. dollar. And you'd go up there and you'd say, oh, this is a nice shopping center in Windsor, Ontario. This is fantastic. I want to go into this record shop. Gee, what's a record? Anyhow, I want to buy a record. And what do you mean it's $8 back in the States? We only have to pay $6. What's the $2 difference? Well, you're in Canada. And our Canadian dollar was worth more than the U.S. dollar. I think that was back during the Vietnam War. And I remember going across the bridge, and we went into customs, and the man looked at me in the back seat, because I wasn't driving at the time. And he looked at me and says, and how long are we going to stay in Canada? And I looked at him and I said, long enough for some food, visit a shop, and leave. Because a lot of people were going to Canada to avoid the draft. But at that time, the Canadian dollar was worth more than the U.S. dollar. And so, you know, you have to really watch to see what's going on. And President Trump went to Davos, Switzerland, you know, and he was saying, hey, you want to play ball with us, because, you know, we could have a steep tariff on solar panels or washing machines or some other place, basically targeting China and some of the other Asian producers. But yeah, sure enough, he did. And what's that going to do to the U.S. economy? I have a feeling it's going to make some U.S. manufacturers of solar panels make more money. Yeah, the foreign panels may be cheaper. Who knows? They may be a tad bit better. But if you can supply from an American company and supply American workers with jobs and income, that's worth it. So we'll just see what happens. And oh, by the way, that also steps down at the end of the first year. Any tariff that was placed for washers and solar panels or whatever President Trump decided to do, it's going to back down a little bit each year for the next 3 or 4 years. That's only to force the other guys to play on an even table. Speaking of a crazy table, and not an even one, Goldman Sachs, actually Goldman, said expect a market correction in the coming months. Now, what's a market correction? That's another word for devaluation. It's another word for inflation. It's another word for you better be prepared, because we've talked in the past about other banks saying it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Do you think they're controlling everything? I kind of think so. Well, anyhow, the article from Zero Hedge said, while there's are reasons to be bullish on global equities in 2018 and bear market risks are low, a correction is coming increasingly, like Goldman's equity strategist Peter Oppenheimer wrote, repeating Zero Hedge's observation from last Friday. And as Goldman notes, this melt-up has occurred despite the already strong returns last year. And the S&P Standard & Poor's 500 had its second highest risk-adjusted returns in more than 50 years, and MSCI World had its second highest risk-adjusted returns since the index began in 1970. Well, the bond markets are also experiencing sharp risk-adjusted losses. And so Goldman's saying, you know, drawdowns within bull markets of 10% or more are not uncommon. But when you start getting into 10 and 20%, that's what you get, and it's a little bit scary. And the Goldman strategist has calculated the average bear market prices falls of 30% over 13 months, and it takes 22 months to recover to previous levels, basically in normal terms. The average bull market correction is 13% over 4 months and takes just 4 months to recover. So here we have Goldman saying that. Now, one of Bank of America's imminent market crash indicators was just triggered, according to Zero Hedge's, and I'll say this in quotes, Tyler Durden, which means one of the ghostwriters. I always thought Tyler was a real person, but obviously not. But anyhow, early last month, we had a thing about Bank of America's guaranteed bear market indicators. And, you know, since 1986, a bear market was followed each time that the ERR rule was triggered, which is the estimate revision ratio. And it's had a 100% hit rate predicting upcoming bear markets since 1988. And so that's what they're saying, to watch out for a market crash. How much? Who knows? It could be 10%. X22 today had a video, and the gentleman that was on that show said, it could be 10% adjustment. Well, what would happen if you went to bed one night and all of a sudden you woke up and they said, well, we now have 10% or 20% more inflation, and the dollar's value has dropped by 20 or 30%. That means your dollar value has dropped. What if it happened like Greece and you weren't prepared? I mean, people went to the ATMs to get their drachmas out, and the government finally said, well, you can only take out 300 drachmas a day. And then later on, it was even less. And the banks were taking money out of your account to pay for their stupidity and to pay the European Union banks or European Common Bank to cover for losses, because Greece was a bad investment. All you have is tourism for the most part and fish. So you have to watch for that. But what would happen if you woke up that way? Ira, what would you do?
I'd be a little confused, I think, you know?
Yeah, I would be really worried. You know, and I tell people, hey, find some secure storage and put some money aside.
You know, the secure storage, I think, is more important than people really realize, you know, because if you put it into different accounts and that kind of thing, a lot of those accounts, they may very well get looted, you know?
And that happens. And, you know, make sure it's secure. And make sure you have enough to get you by. Now, how much is enough? Well, if you take a look at it, you want to set enough money aside to pay your bills for probably 3 months, because it's probably going to take 3 months to get things started out at a minimum to get the correction done. It could be as little as a month. It could take 2 months. It could take 3 months. It could even take 6 months. So if you have house payments to make, car payments to make, you have to have food for the family, you have to have gasoline to get around. So how are you going to do that? So you really have to take a look at, okay, I better be putting some money aside in a well-secure place and not in the bank. Don't put your money in the bank. Only a minimum amount to pay your bills. Everything else, put it in a safe place. Then if you want to convert a little bit of it to precious metals, hey, that's your choice. But be able to pay your bills. Be able to feed your family. What happens if you have a crash? The government's not going to come in and help you. They didn't really help anybody during the Great Depression. They didn't really help anybody in, what, 2007, 2008. And you say, well, the social agencies will take care of me. Well, yeah, only as long as the food lasts.
Or if you're lucky enough to get on it. Or if you're lucky enough to get on it, you know, because a lot of times those programs, they're not always easy to get on, you know.
That's true. They have certain stipulations. And then you have people going from food bank to food bank to food bank.
Yep.
Just to get enough to feed their family.
And a lot of states now, too. I mean, bear in mind, a lot of states are really looking hard at doing the whole work for welfare kind of programs, too.
That's right. And so things can get scary, and they can get scary awful quick. And if you think that, oh, he's just saying, well, it's going to happen overnight. Yeah, it can. It could happen over a period of a week. It could happen over a period of a month or 2 months. You know, there's going to be a storm happening, and if you're not prepared, you're in trouble. Hey, and you know, let's take a look at the cost of 30 common American grocery items over 10 years. And that's from 2007 up to 2017. Did you know all-purpose flour back in 2007 was 36 cents a pound? It's now up to 52 cents a pound on average, and that's a 44% increase. How about white rice? Back in 2007, it was 55 cents an ounce. Or, I'm sorry, a pound. And now it's 72 cents. Take a look at pasta. If you don't make your own pasta, you go to buy it in the store, it was 88 cents for 1 pound. Now it's up to $1.28, which is a 45% increase. How about bacon? Everybody loves bacon. Well, almost everybody. But sliced bacon back in 2007 was $3.66 a pound, and now it's $5.79 a pound. That's a 58.2% change. Everybody likes peanut butter. Even dogs like peanut butter, you know, when they put it on the roof of their mouth, and then they go nuts running around the house trying to lick it off. Well, in 2007, the creamy peanut butter was $1.79 for a jar. Now it's up to $2.56, a 43% increase. And you say, oh, well, there's no inflation. Take a look at it. It's out there. Just walk around in the store and check your prices. And check your prices on the outside aisles, too. You're safer buying from the outside aisles than you are from the inside aisles. That's where they really jack up the prices. Also, according to an article in Zero Hedge, the honest poor, 1 out of 5 of America's homeless live in New York City or Los Angeles. And the U.S. cities with the most homeless people, New York City was 76,501, Los Angeles City and County, 55,188. Seattle King County was 11,643, San Diego City and County, 9,160. Boston, 6,135. in Philadelphia, 5,693. That's from Statista, Statista. And that's from Niall McCarthy. And 65% of the country's homeless population was provided with emergency shelter. And that was from a report at U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD. Take a look at those cities, and guess what? They were all run by Democrats. Would you want to go through Los Angeles and seeing a whole bunch of homeless people just taking a bike tour? It's scary. How did they get there? Why are they homeless? Are the taxes too high? Is the food cost too high so they can't afford to live there? Gasoline too high so they can't afford a car? Insurance too high? Why did it get there? That's a question. Well, you know, before we go, we always do a little bit of humor from the Wrinkle City Gazette, and it came out, and it's at moneyandchange.weebly.com, and it's free. You can go back there, and you can check out the current edition there. And there's also a website that you can go to, and that's also at weebly.com. But if you check out moneyandchange.weebly.com, back in the humor section, they'll have a link to get you to the archives. But, you know, a preacher died and went to heaven. He noticed that a New York cab driver had been awarded a higher place than he was. And he said, "I don't understand," he complained to God. "I devoted my entire life to my congregation." And God looked at him and he said, "Our policy here in heaven is to reward results. Now, was your congregation well attuned to you whenever you gave a sermon?" The minister goes, "Well, I really have to admit, some in the congregation fell asleep from time to time." And God said, "Exactly. And when people rode in this man's taxi, they not only stayed awake, they even prayed." And with that, that's all I have this week, Ira. Remember to donate to keep the show on the air. Don't get into any taxis where you have to kneel and pray.
Indeed.
And get scared out of your wits. But, you know, donate to keep the show on the air. I donate my time and my research to hopefully help people out. And we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great, Stu. Thank you so much for all that you do, and much appreciated you being here every week with us. Everybody, keep safe out there. Have fun, and we'll talk to you again soon. And I have never seen anything like this. Here are the four pillars.